2-minute meditation. Serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Practice. Talking about practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you've won. You are lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then can you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you are going to gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back at years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you?
My name's Tarek. I'm the addict.
Oh.
So we go through this process in hopes of having a spiritual experience, one that awakens our spirit. And now the task is to live the spiritual basis of life. And the step process, steps 1 through 9, they're what turn us into hollow bones so we can channel the loving spirit of God. And in my opinion, it's like going to the dentist. We got to drill before we can fill. And that we've created space within ourselves to store emotional pain that life is going to bring to us. You know, there's a saying in Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-Step Fellowship, life on life's terms. That's not true. Life doesn't have any terms. We have the terms. Life is just life, unfolding, disclosing itself. And so the step process hollows us out, and it catapults us like a launching pad into the world of the Spirit. And the world of the Spirit, the 10th and 11th and 12th steps, those are dimensions of the Spirit world living. And there's a new language. I was in a meeting 2 weeks ago, and the topic was the 10th step. And when I got to this meeting, I told myself, I'm not going to share tonight, I'm just going to listen. And everyone that shared about the 10th step, and this is going to, I mean, there's a judgment in me for some reason that night, but it's because of my experience with how impactful this step has been. But everybody that shared about admitting when I'm wrong. The 10th step short form up there says, we continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That is not what the big book says about the 10th step. And then 12 and 12 says a lot about the 10th step too, but much more than it just admitting when I'm wrong. To me, the 10th step's the one that builds the relationship with God more than any of the other steps. Because when I leave my house, like when I wake up, it's the 11th step. Like currently my practice is I wake up, I brush my teeth, I go get a cup of coffee, I've created these spaces in my home. I implore you to create a beautiful space in your home where you can practice cultivating the expectancy of God's presence. The big book says the consciousness of the presence of God is sure to come to you. In the back of the book, in the Spiritual Experience Appendix, it says that most of our members believe the essence, which is the central point of the spiritual experience, is the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. What my reading comprehension translates that into is I got to remember God as often as possible. And the step that allows me to remember, to bring, like the word remember, if you break it down, it means to bring the members back together, to remember. We are remembering our oneness with God. And I need a step that allows me to access that as often as possible throughout the course of the day. It is by far, without a shadow of a doubt, the hardest step to practice for me. To remember God as often as possible. My understanding of God. Not anyone else's understanding of God, but my understanding of God. And so in the 10th step, I have these things that I'm tasked to do. Watch, witness, observe, attention, focus on my what's going on internally in Tarek. Am I getting resentful right now? I'm going to give you a real-life example. Friday morning, I drove to Atlanta Thursday night. I hung out with my mom and stepdad. My mom has the capacity to bring out my character defects faster than anyone on this planet, practically. And I'm sitting there, and she's just sharing these things about why she's not willing to take certain actions. And I'm thinking, you got to be fucking kidding me. She is crazy. She's the poster child for the spiritual malady. And I have sponsored my mom. Like, I will treat her like a sponsee. And I give her, like, these really hard directions. My girlfriends will sometimes say, man, you are so not passionate with your mother. And so, but for whatever reason, I was, the 10th step was alive on Friday morning, and I noticed myself getting very frustrated with my mother. I noticed myself about to become selfish and tell her what to do. Right? Because anytime I'm telling somebody what to do, that's a form of selfishness. And I took it, I closed my eyes, and she's sitting right next to me, and I took a deep breath. And I opened my eyes, and I could just love her the way she is because she's doing the best that she can. She has a lifetime of living a certain way. She may never change. She does not have the access to this program. She does not have access to a relationship with a power greater than herself. She understands some dogma and some rules and regulations, and that's about it. And I felt compassion for her, and in that moment, I could be of service to her because I was not telling her what to do. And I think she sensed that I was okay with whatever she was saying. That's the 10th step, alive and well, right there. That's how you practice a 10th step. I paid attention. Now, for years, I would ask. I would say a prayer. But for me, today, when I acknowledge my breath, when I took that deep breath, a part of my practice is to understand that that's not my breath, that God blew that breath into me and that it will always be God's breath. And I become aware of God's presence in my life. And for some reason, when I become aware of that, my relationship to the present moment changes. Right? But then we've got this thing, the ego, that's working at the same time as all of this is happening. And that's why I have to watch. And that's why I have to acknowledge my breath as the form of asking. But I've been doing this for a really long time. That's not how it started. It was started with watch and ask. Ask God to remove my frustration, direct my attention to what you would have me be. You would have me be present and loving to my mother. Okay, let me turn back. Turn back. Turn back to the moment. Now, the big book says we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. For years, when I was practicing the 10th step, is watch, ask, I'm going to call someone I sponsor. See how they're doing today. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Now it's turn my thoughts back to the moment. I want to be a child of the moment. That's where God is experienced. God is experienced nowhere else except the present moment. I turn back to the moment and I stop fighting. I stop fighting. I repeat that over and over throughout the course of the day. And occasionally, I got to call Brandon and do a 10-step call. I have done this a few times and I can't seem to shake it. I need him to ask me a series of questions that are going to get me undisturbed. And then once I'm undisturbed, I can look at something from more of a position of neutrality, which is a part of the 10-step promises. The 10-step promises are the most amazing promises in our big book. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even drugs or alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. Right? They're talking specifically about our desperate experiment of the first one. Sanity will have returned. And it talks about this happens automatically with very little thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding it. But I feel as though I've been placed in the position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn it off. The problem has been removed. What is the problem? The illusion that I ever had a choice. Well, I didn't have a choice when it got into my body, and I didn't have a choice when it wasn't in my body. Now, I recoil as if from a hot flame. I'll give you guys, remember I told you guys I had 5 surgeries, right? This is how the 10th step works in action. So I get prescribed all these painkillers, and it's Percocet 10s, right? And I loved painkillers. And so I get home from the hospital, and I mean, I've still got the whatever they gave me, the morphine or whatever for the surgeries. And so I know that I am under the influence of these narcotics at this point. And so I'm laying on the couch every time at home, and I'm taking 1 to 2 every 4 to 6 hours, as the prescription says. And I think on all 5 surgeries, on the second or third day each time, I can start. See, the big book says that while Tarek may stay away from drugs and alcohol for a month or a year, he acts much like other people. But once he introduces alcohol and or drugs into his system, something happens both bodily and mentally. So as I'm laying on the couch, I am witnessing my body have an abnormal, like there's something in me that's woken up, and my mind is starting to change. My mind is starting to say, if you tell her it's been 4 hours, she'll come down and give you the medication because she doesn't want to see her baby in any pain, right? And or they're in the kitchen in the drawer where all the medication is. She's upstairs. I can run into the kitchen and grab another pill. This happened to me every single time after those surgeries. And every single time it happened, this is the next thing you heard. Marcy, come take these pills away. When we moved out of that house, when we were getting divorced, there were 5 bottles completely full of Percocet 10s. 5 bottles from all 5 surgeries. The big book says, when tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. So a while back, I'm the guy that people call when they're about to have surgery. And because I've had all these experiences. And without fail, they're asking me for some human power to implement while they're having surgery. You guys know what kept me safe and protected? Being in fit spiritual condition. Now, granted, I sent a text out to everyone in my network telling them what was going on. I was having surgery, so I had people calling to check on me. I was talking to my network. I was working with sponsees. I was praying and meditating. I was doing everything that the 3 legacies require us to do: recovery, unity, and service. So I was taking the actions that had me in fit spiritual condition. And I was able to recoil as if from a hot flame every single time. I get a phone call, and the way I handle the phone call when someone's asking me this, hey, well, tell me what's going on with your prayer meditation life. All right. You going to home group? How many guys you sponsoring? Where are they at in the steps? And like, occasionally they're like, what the hell is this guy doing? Isn't he supposed to tell me I need to like call everybody? How am I going to get through this? Blah, blah, blah. And the last guy I was talking to, I was like, bro, if you haven't been taking the actions to be in fit spiritual condition, it is too late now. It is too late for you. You are literally going into a crapshoot right now.
The house is on fire.
And they always want to know, what am I supposed to do when I'm having surgery? I'm like, yeah, you should have been already doing it. You should have already been doing it. So you take that for what it's worth. That's been my experience with that stuff. And the 10-step promises are a real thing for me. I want to read something. I just finished reading the book Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. Now, Bill Wilson, in this other book I was reading, he, like, in conversation, says that William James could perhaps be considered one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what happened to Bill is he was sitting in Towns Hospital, and he was in there for the 3rd or 4th time. He's on like the 4th or 5th day of being in that detox, I believe. Evie has come to visit him a few times. And I've read in certain places that Roland Hazard, who's the certain American businessman in the big book, has also been with Evie to visit Bill. Maybe at their home or in the hospital. I can't remember. But Evie or Roland gives Bill Wilson the varieties of religious experience after Bill has his experience. So Bill's on his medication, whatever meds they used to give you back then, the barbiturates and stuff to get you detoxing. And they, I think they actually give you alcohol so and taper you down. And you probably hallucinate when you have the DTs, I would imagine. And so Bill asked Evie, what's this neat formula you were trying to talk to me about? Let's talk about it. So they do some step work in that hospital really quick, you know, not the way we do it these days. And Bill's still struggling with this idea of a God in human form. He could get down with this idea of like some like creative intelligence in the universe. And he's just depressed and he's angry and he blurts out, if there is a God, show yourself to me. And the room lit up. And a breeze came through the room, and Bill sat up in his bed. And thank God he's been reading this book, I think. It either right after this, because the next day, as the story goes, Bill runs to Dr. Silkworth and says, Doc, 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 I don't know what happened, but something's happened to me. And Dr. Silkworth, bless his heart, what a brave doctor. He says to Bill, I don't know what's happened to you, Bill, but anything's better than the way you were yesterday. You should hold on to it. And Bill, deserving to be put in a straitjacket, says to Dr. Silkworth, Doc, 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 I think everybody in this hospital should have what just happened to me. Let me go talk to everybody. And the brave doctor says, yeah, go talk to everybody. That's amazing right there. That's an amazing experience. Because what do doctors typically have? They have what's called the God complex, right? They think they're like the answer to everything. That's not the doctor that we got. That's not the doctor that we had in this experience for Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God. So I pulled this little excerpt from William James's Varieties of Religious Experience. When, however, a positive intellectual content is associated with a faith state, it gets invincibly stamped in upon belief. And this explains the passionate loyalty of religious persons or spiritual people everywhere to the minute details of their so widely differing belief systems around spiritual experience. Taking belief systems and the faith state together as forming what we call religions or spiritual groups and treating these as purely subjective phenomena without regard to the question of their truth. We are obligated on account of their extraordinary influence upon action and endurance. That means they can influence our course of action in our lives to class them amongst the most important biological functions of mankind. Their stimulant and anesthetic effect is so great that the professor in a recent article goes so far as to say that so long as men can use their idea of God and spirituality, they care very little who he is, or even whether he is at all. The truth of the matter can be put, says this professor, in this way. God is not known. He is not understood. He is used, sometimes as meat purveyor, sometimes as moral support, sometimes as a friend, sometimes as a source of love, sometimes as an object of love. If he proves himself useful, the religious consciousness of the individual asks no more than that. Does God really exist? Question mark. How does he exist? Question mark. What is he? Question mark. Are so many irrelevant questions. Not God, but life, more life, a larger, richer, more satisfying life is, in the last analysis, the end of religion and the spiritual way of life. The love of life at any and every level of development is the spiritual impulse. At this purely subjective rating, not objective, but subjective, therefore spirituality must be considered vindicated in a certain way from the attacks of her critics. It would seem that she cannot be a mere anarchy in survival, but must exert a permanent function, whether she be with or without intellectual content, and whether, if she have any, it be true or false. These ideas and these beliefs have influenced people positively, and people take action and have new lives and experience this idea of religion. So what they're trying to say is, like, this thing that we try to figure out all the time and we try to label and categorize, if we just go through the investigation, if we just ask questions and we stay curious and we contemplate what great traditions have been talking about since the beginning of time, we will undergo a course of action that will change our lives. But we always think that we need to know what, in the end, what's there, what's waiting on us. Like, I don't know with certainty if there is a God. I have faith, and I believe that there is, and I attempt to live a life that is backing up that belief. That's all that's happening here. But what I see a lot of people struggle when it comes to step 2 and 3 because they got to figure something out. Or they think that the religion they grew up with looks like the bitter end or death itself, so they don't want to go back to it. My ideas about it are there's so much out there in terms of investigation. And so in my prayer life, one of the things I'm always thankful for is that I've been curious for as long as I have been. My curiosity led me to read this book. My curiosity led me to read the Bhagavad Gita. My curiosity led me to read excerpts of the Bible. My curiosity led me to read the Quran. My curiosity led me to read the Dhammapada. And I didn't need to find out any truths. I was just curious about it because there have been so many traditions that have been delivered to mankind. And so there's a line in our big book that says, be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer. So as part of my 11th step, after I wake up, after I get that coffee, after I go to the beautiful space I've created in my home that's devoted to this exercise, I sit and I ask myself two questions. And asking myself two questions has somehow impacted the way I live my life and my relationship with God. The two questions that I ask, and I did this morning sitting in the hotel room, do I know why I'm about to pray and meditate? And I just sit and I watch what's going on in my mind, my consciousness. I don't care what's coming up. I just ask the questions. And then I ask the second question. Is my heart present in what I'm about to do? Is this a sincere effort to cultivate the expectancy of God's presence in this practice? That the consciousness of the presence of God in the moment is a possibility for me. Like, I'm just asking the question and I'm just sitting. And that exercise typically takes anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes, depending on the day. After that, I take out books that I read. And I read a few pages. And I'm not trying to memorize. I'm not reading for knowledge. I'm reading to see what the impact is on my consciousness, my state that morning. Right? What's going on inside it? There are memories coming up from my past that have to do with this reading? You know, is there some sort of contemplation that's going on? And I just go through that exercise. And then when all that's done, I read 4 books, 2 pages, 2 to 4 pages out of each book. I meditate for 15 minutes at a minimum. 15 minutes at a minimum. Some days it's 15 minutes, some days it's 20 minutes. There are days when it's 25 minutes. And then it's the 10th step after that. The 10th step. That's where I'm going to have access to this relationship out there in the real world. And that's when it goes back to watch, ask, turn. These are the things that I must do throughout the course of the day in order to remember God as often as possible. So I don't know if God exists. I'm not certain that he's waiting for me on the other side. I'm not certain she's waiting for me on the other side. But what reading William James's book made me realize is the belief in living that way creates an experience. I don't know if prayers actually get answered, but I know when I pray, I'm hooked up with some vibrational level or layer in existence that I don't typically have access to. That's what I do know about prayer. And maybe that creates more access to the grace of God. I don't know. What I think's cool is I'm interested. And I'm not going to take the credit for it. Because the quickest way that I can miss the miracle is take the credit for the experience. Like last night with your question, like, I don't want to take credit for the surrender and miss the miracle that it took place. I don't want to forget that God, that whatever God is, saved me. I don't want to forget that. I think that's all I got.
So remember this guy Viktor Frankl that I talked about last night? It seems like forever ago. The reader may ask why I did not try to escape what was in store for me after Hitler had occupied Austria. Let me answer by recalling the following story. Shortly before the United States entered World War II, I received an invitation to come to the American consulate in Vienna to pick up my immigration visa. My old parents were overjoyed because they had expected I would soon be allowed to leave Austria. I suddenly hesitated, however. The question beset me, could I really afford to leave my parents alone to face their fate, to be sent sooner or later to a concentration camp, or even to a so-called extermination camp? Where did my responsibility lie? Should I foster my brainchild, logotherapy, by emigrating to fertile soil where I could write my books? Or should I concentrate on my duties as a real child, the child of my parents who had done whatever he could do to protect them? I pondered the problem this way and that way, but I could not arrive at a solution. This was the type of dilemma that made one wish for a, quote, hint from heaven, as the phrase goes. It was then that I noticed a piece of marble lying on the table at home. When I asked my father about it, he explained he had found it on the site where the National Socialist had burned down the largest Viennese synagogue. He had taken a piece home. It was part of the tablets on which the Ten Commandments were inscribed. In gilded Hebrew letter was engraved on a piece. My father explained that this letter stood for one of the commandments. Eagerly I asked, "Which one is it?" He answered, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land." At that moment, I decided to stay with my father and mother upon the land and let the American visa lapse. It's an active tenth step, coupled with some prayer and meditation. There's power in this stuff. Pascal's wager, Tarek kept kind of hinting at this. Pascal's wager, Pascal argues that a rational person should live as though God exists and seek to believe in God. If God does not exist, such a person will have only a finite loss, some pleasures, luxuries, etc. Whereas if God does exist, he stands to receive infinite gains, as represented by eternity in heaven, and avoid infinite losses and eternity in hell. You see, when you start to act as if God does exist and as if you have a conscious relation with whatever this power is, some really cool stuff happens. Whether or not it is actually God or not, it still happens. You know what? The tenth step is, I think you said this, but I'm going to re-say it. The tenth step is what I do from the time I leave my house until the time I return home, and all my interactions with everybody. The tenth step is existence. It's relationships. It's interacting with everybody and everything, including the trees and nature and whatever the power is out there. It's all relationships. So the tenth step is where your relationships lie. One of the things that I see guys that leave the bridges struggle with the most is in cultivating those relationships. I've joked about it, but I'm serious. I have had a multitude of people threaten to call me after they left here. And I think really only one of them from the day he left cultivated a relationship with me. There are a ton of guys that come to my home group that were here that say they're going to call. And you know how many times they call? Maybe once. I call them back, and you know how many times they call me back? None. Guys, I don't know what it is about. I don't know if it's the current generation or if it's just people in general, but people don't call. People don't understand what an active 10th step life looks like. So think about real quick. You don't have to do it out loud, but think about the five people that are closest to you right now. Not necessarily in proximity, but in terms of the people you're hanging out with. You want to know how you're doing in recovery? Look at them. If the people you're hanging out with are slacking, guess what you are? I was kind of going through my phone to make sure I had an accurate list of my current 10-step network. These are people that I talk to at a minimum three times, if not more, in a week. They include Tarek. I think he's doing pretty good. They include Satcher. He's showing up here and just being present because he wants to learn more about the steps. My buddy Will, he's with his daughter enjoying the nationals with her. And he and I talk probably every morning. My buddy Jay would have been here except for he's spreading his dad's ashes with his brother yesterday. My buddy John, he calls me on a regular basis. My buddy Scott, I mean, Scott and I sometimes talk 2-3 times a day. Some of these guys are new to my 10th Step Network, and some of them have been here for 10 plus years. Every one of them is serious about recovery. Every one of them is sponsoring people. How does my sobriety look? Look at them. My network includes my wife, who's very spiritual. She doesn't do this work, but she has a spiritual, kind heart, loving nature. She's very important in my network. She probably has the most inconvenient way of calling me out on my shit. I don't generally like it when she points it out. I'm very resistant to it, but I listen to her because she knows. In the third step, we say this prayer. We give our will and our life over to God. In the 10th step, it says we can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish it is the proper use of the will. Once we've done the work, once we've gone through the inventory, we see how we show up, and we've started cleaning up the past, we get access to a portion of our will. And the reason why we get an access to a portion of our will is because it's in alignment with God's will. The way that I used to act, it was all about me. The way I act now is in alignment with whatever this power is, and it contributes and makes the world better. The 10th and the 11th step, they interact with each other in terms of how we experience God and God's children. I'm almost certain that this is my favorite question. What if your thoughts are actually prayers? Well, the first time we did this workshop, a guy in the back responded with, "Well, those would be some pretty fucked up prayers." And I appreciated him for saying it. But what if you actually are serious about amends and you're serious about seeing how you affect relationships and you get serious about your judgments and what's going on internally and you endeavor to start cleaning that up? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So if your thoughts are actually prayers, would you endeavor to clean them up? The question I asked too is that like most people, when you talk to them, that they believe that there's this all-powerful God that sees everything and knows everything. But yet when you theorize that thoughts are prayers, and God sees and knows everything, wouldn't it endeavor that God would know your thoughts? You see, and I believe that any thought or prayer I put out there is out there forever until it gets canceled out by another thought or until it's retracted. So how do I get to a place where I can slow the mind down enough to where I can actually see what my thoughts are? I know you guys have probably observed it. Tarek will be talking and I'll be over here and I'll be looking through books because he'll say something and it'll make me think of something in a book and I'll go look it up. I'll be taking notes. I'm still listening to him. And here's how I know I'm listening to him, because there's so many times where I'll be doing something else, and because we've been doing this for so long, I know what he's getting ready to say, and I'll hand him something or I'll point something out or do something. Or he'll lose his track and I'll be able to tell him where he was. Because through meditation, I'm able to slow the mind down enough to where I can actually experience multiple planes of existence all at once. Anybody in here want to be smarter? Meditation, just by the nature of it, makes you smarter because your mind is capable of doing more. So, what's my routine look like? You know what? Is a lot of you experienced exactly what my morning routine looks like. Is I read out of 3 books. Then I read from On Awakening. I read 2 paragraphs. I pause and I meditate. When I'm done with the meditation, I continue reading from 87 to the end of the chapter. Those of you that were present this morning, that is exactly what you experienced. Now, what happened in the middle is we did 3 different types of meditation. You may have noticed that. Maybe you didn't. The first one we did was a body scan. It's where we're checking in with every single part of our body to get us present to what it is and what's going on. That's something you can do anytime, anywhere to get you here in this moment. Then we did a little guided meditation. And then when that finished, we did a silent meditation. The depths of meditation and prayer and exploration, it's so infinite. You can never tap it. There's walking meditation. There's music meditations. There's so many things that you can do. And all of it is designed for you to clean up your receptors to be able to have a better connection to the power that's out there. I know some of you are aware of the old way of the TV where you had the antennas and you had the UHF and the VHF dial and you had to get the antennas just right to get the signal to come in. And nothing would happen. The channel would not change. The antennas would still be pointing in the same direction. You come in one day and all of a sudden it's all static. And the antennas may have been pointing this way and then you have to do that. And then all of a sudden you got a clear screen again. That's meditation. Is you can have a great, wonderful, powerful practice with meditation and be running a clean signal and be doing the same thing. And all of a sudden it's junked up. So you got to change it up. You got to try to find a different way. You read some things, you explore some things, you experience some things, and you have a new experience with meditation, which has a new experience with your current existence, which allows you to tap in and in some ways kind of seem like you got some sort of magic going on. I asked the guy a question earlier, and he asked me, why are you asking me that? I said, oh, maybe I overheard you saying something. I really have no idea how I knew to ask him the question that I asked him, but what I know is that Spirit said, ask him this question right now. It sounds kind of kooky if you don't have any experience with it. But there's this part of this paragraph, I feel compelled to tell this story. It says, what used to be the hunch or our occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more in the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. So an experience I had with this paragraph one time, I was taking a contract over to a client, and I had intended to spend some time with them and schmooze with them, trying to get some more work out of them. And I told them I was going to come by at a certain time. I figured I'd spend 30 minutes with them, and then I was going to go to a lunch meeting, an AA meeting at lunch. I got there and he wasn't there. So what I thought was going to be a 30, 45 minute thing ended up being a drop off a contract and leave. But then I was in this no man's land of I could go back to the office, turn my computer on, and then turn it off, and then go to this lunch meeting. Or I could try to find a way to waste some time so I didn't get to the meeting too early. So I didn't have to use the restroom, but I figured, well, I'll go use the restroom. And as I'm in the restroom, this thought comes of go outside. Like, okay. And then I'm washing my hands and the thought says, go outside. And I'm like, I don't really want to go outside. Maybe I'll just show up to the meeting early, or maybe I'll grab some lunch on the way. And the thought comes again, go outside. So I leave the restroom and I'm walking out. I turn to go towards the elevator to go to my car, and the thought comes again and says, go outside. So I go over and I kind of look outside to see like why I'm supposed to go out there. I put my hand on the door and I'm getting ready to turn around, and thought says, go outside. All right, fine, God, I'll go outside. So I step outside. I'm like, all right, God, I'm outside. What do you want me to do? And then this paragraph starts playing in my head. But, you know, we might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas, right? Like, oh yeah, God really wanted me to come outside. So I put my hand on the door to go back inside. Thought comes stronger. Go outside. So I start walking out there. I'm like, you know, it's a nice spring day. Maybe God just wanted me to come outside and just enjoy nature. I guess I'll walk around the building and enjoy the flowers. And so I'm just kind of doing that, right? I'm moseying along. And all of a sudden, this white pickup truck pulls up next to me, and this lady, she rolls down the window and she says, excuse me, sir, could you help us find this address? So I pull my phone out of my pocket. I'm getting ready to pull up Google Maps. She hands the piece of paper to me. I do not type the address in my phone. I just put my phone back in my pocket. I said, okay, well, what you need to do is you need to go to the end of this road. There'll be a stop sign. You turn left. You go to the top of that hill. There's a stoplight there. At that stoplight, you turn left. You're going to go down a little hill. You're going to go around the bend to the right, a little bit to the left. You're going to come to another stoplight. You're going to see the Performing Arts Center there. Turn right there. And then you're going to go down. You're going to see the back of some retail buildings on your right side. You're going to go around to the right. You're going to go around to the left. You're going to come up a little rise. There's going to be a bank on your right. And then you're going to turn left at that stoplight into that complex. You're going to drive between the two buildings, and you're going to go to the very last suite on the left building. And she says, we've been driving around here for 45 minutes looking for this place. It took my husband 6 months to get this appointment, and we were worried we were going to have to cancel the appointment. You see, the address on the sheet of paper was 3200 Cobb Galleria Parkway, Suite 240, Atlanta, Georgia, 30339. Suite 200, Atlanta, Georgia, 30339. The reason why I can tell you that is because for 7 years of my career, I worked at Suite 240. Okay? Spirit said go outside because I had specific knowledge of where these people needed to go. When you start to explore the spiritual realm, stuff like this starts happening in your life. And it seems really magical, and you can't really explain it. You can't really understand it. And you try to explain it to other people of how you know that there's a power that I'll call God that exists and runs through everything. And a person tries to convince you that it's not possible. Fine. It's not. You're right. But what if it is possible? What if it's possible to gain a conscious contact with whatever this power is and interact with it on a regular basis? What if this power tells you to call somebody and you call somebody and they realize, man, I was in the middle of something, and I had no idea I was in the middle of it until you called. You know who gets my 10-step calls? This list of people, okay? And the reason why they get my 10-step calls is not because I'm calling them and I need to work a 10th step. It's because they're calling me and saying, hey, what's up? And I'm in the middle of some sort of shit at the moment, And it's like, well, this motherfucker and goddamn and blah, 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 blah. And they're like, whoa, how you doing? And it's like, oh, maybe I'm a little disturbed. And then we talk through it, right? Because when I'm disturbed, people call me and I wonder, why are they calling me? This guy has the tendency to do it at the most magical times, right? And he calls me at generally two times. And like when I get a phone call from him at a really weird time, like in the middle of the day, the first thing I do is, what am I doing wrong? Why is he calling me right now? Because he calls me in the morning or in the afternoon. He does not call me in the middle of the day. Because I have enough experience with him calling me where I'm really bent around the axle about something. And he's calling me right at that moment. How does he do that? Is it possible that we're connected to the same thing and that we're running in the same frequency and the universe or whatever it is has sent him a signal that, oh yeah, by the way, call your boy right now. He needs some help. And it's really cool because it outwardly works too, is that you know, sometimes the universe will put me in really strange places to do some really strange things, because this is the way, again, the universe is my universe and it works the way that I work. And so I like things to line up perfectly and be super coincidental. And so what happens is the universe goes, okay, so these people are struggling over here. Who do we got in that area that we can send over there that'll do some crazy stuff and just be helpful? It's like, well, Brandon's over there. Oh, send him. He'll go. And then I show up. And then I'm there at the right moment for whatever that person is that I don't, maybe don't even have a relationship. The exploration involved in these two steps is infinite and powerful. But if you don't do the steps prior to this step and start running clean, you'll never gain access to the full magnitude of what this stuff does. You want to leave those amends undone? Okay, you're not going to get all this. You don't want to write the inventory? Don't. You're not going to get any of this. Just stay miserable. It'll be fine. Or have an incredible experience with this power and wish that you had gained access to it earlier and wish that you had cultivated it at a deeper level earlier. Because it's available to you. We're not special. Everybody has this ability. You know, I think often there's this idea that Tarek and I did something to make ourselves this way. I mean, yeah, we went through the process, but it was the power showing up in our life that made us this way. You guys, there's no more God in us than there is in you. It's there for you. What you have.
It's funny, I've read this book a few times in the past 6 months, and I thought of Brandon when I read this part. This is Chuck Chamberlain, one of the most famous members of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I think this is what we've been talking about all along, praying without ceasing. I find no difference in a prayer and a serious thought. They're the same thing. As we've said since we've been here, fear or worry is a prayer for something you don't want to happen. To live in the conscious awareness of the living presence of God. I don't even much like the Our Father prayer. Our Father, God. I talk about Our Father a lot, but this relationship that we've been talking about this weekend is much, much closer than a father-son relationship. As I said, I've got two sons someplace in Southern California. I don't know where either one of them is. That is impossible with my relationship with my own God. Because God is that which I am. God is that which I am. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't be. I couldn't do. there would be nothing. I would be extinct but for God's life. Because God is life, and there's no way to be separated from God in reality. You know, sometimes Brandon and I sit up here and you hear stuff coming out of us, and you try to reconcile it with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you might have difficulty. But it's in there. It's an interpretation of what's in there. When you get to steps 10 and 11, a lot of your experience will be an interpretation of be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer. The 10th step is about vision, intent, and awareness. How do I stay present to my life in the present moment and the presence of God in my life? That's what I believe the true essence of the 10th step is. There are people who disagree with me who are amazing members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and whatever they're doing works for them. You know, the 10th step could be a spot check inventory. It could be an assets versus liabilities inventory. It could be a review of their day at the end of the night. If it's working for you, then keep doing it. For me, I always remember this story. This was one of my guys that it greatly influenced me, tells this story, and I don't even know if I particularly enjoy the story as much as I used to, but I'll tell it anyway. The story is, if you take 100 people out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you put them back in the bar, you're going to notice something very interesting. You're going to notice that a third of them are going to go to the bar, they're going to belly up to the bar, they're going to drink just until they feel good, and then they're going to go home. You got another third who's going to go to the bar, and they're going to wallow in their beer, and they're going to cry in their whiskey, and they're going to tell you this is all there is of alcohol. You can't do any more. And then they're going to go home. Then you got this other third, and we're going to call them the mad dogs, right? They go to that bar, and they shut that bar down. And then they go to the next bar and they burn that one to the ground. And then they're at the trap house hanging out at the end of the night, and they're playing on through to the next day. You know, those are my people. And you take those individuals out of the bar and you put them back in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's how they work the steps. A third of the people are going to come to our meetings, and they're going to use our meetings like a spiritual filling station. And it's going to be their group therapy, and they're going to get just enough relief to make it to the next meeting. Right? And they are welcome here. You got another third who's going to come into our meetings, and they're going to cry in our meetings, and they're going to wallow in their big books, and they're going to tell you this is all there is of Alcoholics Anonymous and Power of God. And then you got my people, the mad dogs. They're going to come in here, and they're going to be spearheads for God's ever-advancing creation. Spearheads clear the way. You know, I, for whatever reason, have been a little bit of a polarizing figure the entire 15 years I've been here. And people don't just like Tarek. They either like me or they love me or they hate me. There's rarely an in-between, you know. And I'm okay with that. I'm in the world to play the role God assigns. And that's the role I've been assigned. All right. So why would you be a mad dog out there and you come into our fellowship and our program and you turn into a little chihuahua? If you're a mad dog for drugs and alcohol, do you believe you have to be a mad dog for this process? I don't tell the story anymore because I don't like being a guy who like is divisive and separative. But the reason I'm telling this story today, you have what you have whatever experience you will with that story, is that I am grateful for something. The same mentality that I had out on the block where I wanted the good dope has followed me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, and I want the good dope in here. So I go after this like I went after that. Are you doing that? All right, guys, dinner time. We'll see you guys at 6 for the last session.